Ever been in situations sometimes where it might be physical or it could be spiritual, and you pray and things is, you don't hear anything. But is God really silent through it all? That's what the message is about today, the silence really of God. But is he really silent? In Psalm 62, verses 1 and 2, we read, "My soul waits in silence for God only. From him is my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be greatly shaken." And down verse 5 of 62, it says, "My soul waits in silence for God only, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be shaken. On God, my salvation and my glory rests. The rock and my strength, my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." Then in Psalm 121, that's an interesting psalm. You have time, read that psalm on your own. But Psalm 121, I just want to read one verse out there. Verse 3 of 121, it says, "He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber." So God's not sleeping. He's interested in what we do. Isaiah 26 verse 4 says, "Trust in the Lord forever, for in God the Lord we have an everlasting rock." You know, one of the frustrating things in the Christian life is the times that we serve really what? The most silent God, isn't it? Here I've given all myself. I begged and pleaded and done everything I know what to do. I prayed everything I know to pray. And after I finished praying, it's like, "God, what do you think? Lord, am I on the right track? What do you plan to do about all this? Are you working really in my life?" The thing is, we whine. Why hasn't God answered my prayers? And we think about, where are you when I need you most? Are you really working in my life? The thing is, we whine because we don't see anything big and dramatic happening, isn't it? No burning bushes, no parting of the Red Seas, no earth-shaking moments. Nothing. And God's just silent. And God never says anything. And I know we have his word, and I know we have peace in our heart and all that stuff, but sometimes I just wish I had something a little bit more concrete really to hold on to. You know, we bank our whole Christianity and on this Christianity, and God is so quiet. It's the frustration of the man or the woman who comes to the pastor and talks about their teenager, their kids rebelling. And you look at the pastor and they don't know what to do. And they both wish that he could just pause and say, "God, would you just send an angel just to sit down for 5 minutes?" That's all we want. Just to ask a few questions, just to make sure we're on the right track. And God's silent. Or it's the woman who's frustrated with her husband. She doesn't know what to do. And she prays and prays and prays, but her husband doesn't change. And she prays some more. And God's just so silent. Well, it's frustrating, isn't it? You know, your boss, you pray for him or her, and he or she doesn't change. And you pray for those people at work that are so obnoxious. And continually putting you down for your Christianity. And they continually try to influence you in the wrong way. And you pray and you pray and you think that every day that you go into things are going to be better. Or maybe they won't say anything today. But nothing changes. And you say, "God, should I say? Should I stay?" And it's just silence. And it's frustrating. And what's worse is we come to the scripture, and it seems like everybody in the Old Testament and the New Testament, that God kept showing up. Angels keep showing up. Miracles keep happening. And you think, if that was like that for me, it would be a little bit easier, wouldn't it? You know, Peter's thrown into prison, and the angels show up and say, that's going to be all right. Then they lead him out. And you think, if my circumstances worked out like that, I could have faith too. My mistake is thinking God works only in gigantic and dramatic ways. But it doesn't work out like that for us, does it? But then you read about Abraham and Daniel and David, and every day was a miracle. And every day God kept showing, interrupting their lives and says, don't do that. Hang in there. Everything is going to be all right. And delivering them, but in my circumstances, but I don't know about you, but in my circumstance, it doesn't seem to work out that way. God just seems to be awfully silent. Some days, you know, we're so busy and so preoccupied, busy watching for drama, looking for the big answers that we miss the small moments. Those God moments saturating our days. You know what our real frustration is? We wonder sometimes if God's really even interested, don't we? Maybe he's in Iran today. Or maybe he's in Washington, D.C. We won't go there. Maybe he's looking out for children who are starving to death today. But my needs, could God really be interested? And if God was so interested, and if this book is true, why doesn't he do something? Why doesn't he say something? Why doesn't he communicate something with me? Just anything will bring me some relief. And sometimes it's what? It's just so silent, isn't it? And it's frustrating, and it causes us to doubt. And it causes us to begin to take things really into our own hands. And it causes us to make mistakes, and it causes us to do things we regret because God oftentimes is just so silent. And it raises two questions. First, what in the world is God up to? What in the world is God doing? Did you ever wonder about that? Second question, what in the world are we to do really in the meantime? And today I like to the best of my ability to put some light on those two questions according to the scriptures. What in the world is God up to? And secondly, what are we to do in the meantime? Now to answer those questions, we're going to look at a very familiar passage. And the problem with looking at a very familiar passage is this. As soon as you find out this passage, you automatically, in your mind, you rush to the end of the story. And you say, well, it always works out for Bible people, doesn't it? Every life in the Bible could really be a movie in itself. It's a drama that always works out for the good. What I want to do today is to slow down, moving through the narrative of this man's life. You know why? Because that's how our life is, isn't it? We wake up and it's just the next day. And nothing changed. It's not like in the movies where it blacks out at the bottom of the screen and says June 7th, 10 years later. Wouldn't life be great if we could live it like that? But it's one day at a time. And unfortunately, it seems they're very, what? Silent days when it comes to our relationship with God. So turn, if you would, to Genesis chapter 37. And as you're turning there, let me try to explain to you why God has to be interested in the details of our life. The reason we know that God's interested in the details of life is because the fact is he loved us enough to send his son to die for us. You know, God is here with us, always close and always caring. In other words, love by definition orients the relationship around the interests and the desires of the other person, not yourself. It really does. If therefore God loves me, he has to be interested in what I'm interested in because that's the essence of love. The question is, why doesn't he show it more clearly? Chapter 37, let's start verse 2. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph was 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wife. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to the father. Now here's it. Joseph's nothing but a tattletale, right? Verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a very colored tunic. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers. And so they hated him. They could not speak to him on friendly terms. In other words, no matter what Joseph did, his brothers would have something bad to say about him, wouldn't they? I mean, he could go out, clean up the whole house, and everything would look perfect, but they would make fun of something else. Joseph could look great, but they would point out something he'd done wrong. No matter what he did, his whole life, the Bible tells us he was 17 when the story starts. His whole life, no matter what he did, his 10 older brothers hated him. Verse 5. Then Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Ha! How's that? We hate you, Joseph, but now we really hate you. Verse 6. He said to them, please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheave rose up and stood erect, and behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheath. I read this, and I can't even remember what I dreamed. But in the Bible, they remember every detail, and God would speak to them through their dreams. And this was very important. So Joseph only goes in and says, hey, guys, I had this neat dream. And he tells his dream, and the Bible says there in verse 8, then his brother said to him, are you actually going to reign over us? Or are you really going to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. So here's Joseph, who'd done nothing wrong except being born in a family whose father loved him more than the rest. And for 17 years, his brothers hated him. And then things begin to change. It tells us there, they hated him even more. So the story continues. Verse 13. Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them. And he said to him, I will go. Then he said to him, go now and see about the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the flock, and bring back word to me. So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now here's the situation. Here's Joseph and his father back home, and his 10 brothers are out somewhere taking care of the sheep. And Jacob says to Joseph, I want you to go out all by yourself. And his brothers are about 20 to 30 miles out there in the wilderness. Now, I don't know about you, but I think I would have had to come up with some excuse so it would need to be somebody else to go. But Joseph says, sure, Dad, I'll go. So he packs up and off he goes to visit his brothers. Verse 18, when they saw him from a distance, and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. Now, before we go on, maybe you're in a family where your brother and sister and you don't get along. But had they ever plotted to put you to death? We complain like we had big problems, isn't it? Like they stole our toys or they wore our clothes and didn't bother to hang them back up. You know, big things. And Joseph's brothers see him coming, so they plot to kill him. Verse 19. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Now then, come and let us kill him and throw him into one of these pits, and we will say, a wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams. But then they became merciful, didn't they? We shouldn't really kill our brother. Let's just sell him. That's what it says there in verse 21. And they feel kind of bad about killing him. We should be ashamed of ourselves about killing our brother. We'll just sell him to the Egyptians. So sure enough, Joseph shows up, they grab him and throw him in a pit. Now he's in this pit and his brothers are out there having a campfire, roasting hot dogs or making s'mores or whatever. But Joseph is sitting in this pit, which is really a cistern carved out of the ground. And we expect at this point of the story, an angel of the Lord appears to Joseph and said, it's going to be okay. I mean, that would be the biblical thing to happen, wouldn't it? That wouldn't be in our lives. But that's what we kind of expect in this story. But the thing is, this story is, God didn't say a word. And here's Joseph thinking, Lord, I was obedient. I was obeying my father. And as a result of my obedience, I'm in this pit. And so the story goes on, verse 28. Then some Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. Thus they brought Joseph into Egypt. So here's this guy who'd done nothing wrong so far, and just one bad thing leads to another. Growing up in a family that hated him, and then they sold him into slavery. Chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. Now in the Bible, in all narrative literature, and in the movies, it's the same way. They take a whole lot of time and they kind of compress it to just a few words. An hour if you're watching TV, or an hour and a half if you're watching the movie. They take all the years and compress it. Now here's what we kind of picture here, isn't it? We get into the story and it's like, well, on Monday Joseph arrived in Egypt. Monday afternoon he was sold to Potiphar. Tuesday morning Potiphar saw him and thought the Lord is with him. On Tuesday morning, and on Wednesday he put Joseph in charge of his whole affairs of the household. That's sort of how it reads, isn't it? But in reality, it was 10 years he was in Potiphar's house. Now I was going to slow down here a little bit. That means the money he got shoved off with the rest of the servants, who knows where. It's 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Then it was dinner time. Tuesday he had assignments. Tuesday was different. He cleaned up the house, cleaned up the fields, then the barns. Wednesday was different. Start with the fields, then the barns. Thursday started with the barns, went to the fields. Then it was day after day after day after hour and hour, and God never said a word. Now, I don't know about you, but I can relate to that, because we've been in situations we didn't deserve, haven't we? We didn't ask for our parents, did we? God just kind of stuck us there. We didn't even ask for our brothers or sisters. We didn't even ask for a boss. We don't know who hired these people who worked for us. And yet we're in these relationships that are a constant tension, and we think, I didn't ask for this. And that's where we live. And there's Joseph, day one, day two, day three. Now I want you to think, I want you to slow down. I want you to think about the last 10 years of your life. Think of those years. He was 17. Now he's 27. Think of those years in your life. Think of being brought up in a well-to-do home and being sold by your brothers and spending 10 very long, long years working for somebody in a country that you really hated. No God, and God never said a word. Not even, it's going to be all right someday. No Bible, no DVDs. No cell phones, no internet, no Facebook, nothing. But the story goes on. Now this is 10 years later, verse 7. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said to him, lie with me. But he refused, and he said to his master's wife, behold, with me here my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. Let me ask you, do you think you have been a faithful servant to someone who has bought you? Verse 9. There is no one greater in his house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? And I say, now wait a minute. Joseph, this is a guy who let you be brought up in a home where your 10 older brothers hated you. And they hated you even more. And then this God, the God who let these brothers sell you to another nation. This is the God that let them drag you miles and miles away from home and sell you to the captain of the guard of a nation that you really hated. It's your enemy. Joseph, this is a God that basically has abandoned you. And here's this guy saying, I cannot sin against God. Verse 10. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her, to lie beside her or to be with her. Now you would think now that God would show up and say something. Wouldn't he? Hang in there, way to go, right on, Joseph. I'm going to bless you and your family is going to prosper. Not a word. And God's still silent. In verse 11, we know most of the story here. Joseph came in one day, was working in the house. The servants are out someplace else. And Potiphar's wife was after him again. And he just said no, and he took off. And she just let out a scream. The other servants came in. She said, look, he was there. He was trying to get this Hebrew. She had to use, in fact, the text says Hebrew. Use the word Hebrew. As sort of like a slur, if you want to say it that way, in the text, was after me, and he took off. I grabbed his garment, and here it is. So then Potiphar came home, and she told him the same story. How this Hebrew that you put in charge of everything tried to get after me, and he took off, and I grabbed his garment. Well, then Potiphar was, of course, he was a little upset, wasn't he? Absolutely. So in verse 20, it says, so Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail and placed the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in jail. Thanks, God. I appreciate that. I mean, I'm just trying to do what's right. And I'm a ward of a jail. God, I didn't ask for this. God, what am I now supposed to do? And there again in a jail cell, you think God would show up and say, well, it's going to be all right or something. But he's silent. And nothing changes. In fact, things get worse. Did you ever feel like God abandoned you? He's not just interested. And if he was, he would have done something long ago. I'm sure that's how Joseph felt. And it goes on, verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. Now again, we're back to this thing. On Monday, he was put in prison. On Tuesday, the jailer said, well, the Lord's with him. On Wednesday, no. 3 years of that. Think about the last 3 years when you were raised in a good home and you did nothing wrong. And when your obedience led to enslavement. Or when your resisting temptation led to further enslavement. 3 years dragged by here. And God didn't do anything. God didn't say anything. And it goes on, chapter 40. It came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in the confinement of the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail. The same place. Or Joseph was in prison. It just so happens that these two men later on had a dream. So they're talking about these dreams, and Joseph says that he has a unique gift and he can interpret dreams. So Joseph said, let me have it. So the cupbearer told his dream, and at the end Joseph says, well, Pharaoh's going to restore you as his cupbearer. Now I want you to look at this verse. It's the only really human side I can see in this whole story. And Joseph is talking here to the cupbearer in verse 14. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. Even here I have done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon. I mean, he's not stupid, folks. Joseph isn't isn't some kind of pasty guy like, yeah, well, it's whatever. That's not Joseph. He's probably thinking, well, here's my break and here's my chance. Listen, when you get out of here, please mention me to Pharaoh. You know that he thought this guy is my only link of really getting out of this place. He said, I obviously don't see any other way out. Obviously, God's not in any big hurry. I'm not sure God is around, but look, buddy, when you get back to Pharaoh, just please, just mention my name. Verse 16. So when the chief baker saw that, he interpreted it was good, he said to Joseph, be me, I'm next. So he told his dream to Joseph, and then Joseph was a little more hesitant because he said, it's not going to work out with you the way it did for the cupbearer. In fact, you're going to be killed. And sure enough, just like he said, Pharaoh comes in, takes the cupbearer out, takes the baker out, kills the baker, and reinstates the cupbearer. Verse 23. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Thanks, God. No big deal, right? What's 3 years in prison? It's okay, no problem. I'm fine. I'm kind of getting comfortable here. That's not how we would react, is it? And that's when we want to say, God, what in the world are you doing? Why don't you do something? How can you let this go on? If you really loved me, you would do something. If you really existed, you would get involved. How can you just ignore me? How can you just abandon me? And God is silent. And nothing changes. Then finally, in chapter 41, now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And we know the dream that he saw the fat cows and the skinny cows. The skinny cows came up and ate the fat cows. And that kind of startled him. Woke him up a little bit. So he went back to sleep again. And he had a dream of the fat grain came, and then the skinny grains came up and ate the skinny grains. And so Pharaoh didn't know what to do, so he called all his magicians and sorcerers together, but they couldn't even interpret his dream. But the cupbearer happened to overhear all this conversation, and guess what? He said to Pharaoh, hey, I know a guy that can interpret dreams, because I was in jail with him. Where am I at here? Verse 15, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, he called for Joseph, and then of course Joseph had to change his clothes and shave and I guess get cleaned up and everything. Because they weren't like prisons we have today, believe me. They were pretty dismal. Verse 15, chapter 41, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, but no one can interpret it. I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh saying, it is not for me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Now, this is amazing. To me, it is anyways. After all this time, after all his rejection, God hasn't shown interest number one. No word, no sign. And here's Joseph saying, God, he's still in control. And if you need an interpretation for your dream, Pharaoh, You have to get it from him. Well, that's amazing. You know what happens. And you know what happens. You know, Joseph interprets it favorably, and you know the rest of the story. And Pharaoh says, well, you're the smartest guy I ever met. In fact, you're really smarter than me. You know what? I'm going to make you second in command. And he makes Joseph second in command of the most powerful nation in the world. And finally, after 13 years of waiting through the most important years of his life, practically, finally he gets recompense for all the evil done to him. But more importantly, we discover something that Joseph never knew, and that's this. God had a plan, and this was his plan. I'm going to bring a Savior into the world, and I know how I'm going to do it. I'm going to raise up a family to become a nation. And I'm going to take the whole world's attention by saying, look at this nation. And they're going to be so powerful, and everybody will say, Ma, obviously their God is God. And he thought, I'm not only going to do that, I'm going to raise this nation right up under the noses of the most powerful nation of the world. And just when they think they're so tough, and so powerful, my nation is going to walk right out from under their noses. And they thought, and this is through a guy by the name of Joseph, and he never knew. And you know what? He never even found out. You know, when God's silent, he's not still, and he's not at rest. He's not uninvolved. And the mistake we often make is this. We judge God's interest and activity in our life by favorable circumstances, don't we? You see, as long as things are going great, this is the day we just love the Lord. Don't you love the Lord, brother? Isn't God good? But as soon as things get bad, it's like, where are you? Why don't you do something? Oh my, God has abandoned me. I must have sinned. And on we go. Because we think when things are good, God's at work. And when things are bad, God's off on vacation somewhere. You know, God's involvement in your life and in my life can't be based on favorable circumstances, can it? But it's based on two things. It's the development of our character and the fulfillment of his plan for our life. You know, God was engineering every detail of Joseph's life, and he never bothered to tell Joseph. He never bothered to show up to comfort Joseph, but he was involved in every single step of the way. You know, God doesn't always answer the way we expect him to, does he? His timing isn't always ours. When God's silent, he's not still. He's not uninvolved. And he's not off on vacation, and he hasn't forgotten. And God's at work in three ways. Number one, God's at work even now as we sit here in our life to conform us and to shape our character. You know, God is more interested in our character than our circumstances. And obviously that was the case with Joseph. And you know what? When you think back in the life, the lessons that God has taught you, isn't that the truth? God's working in your life whether you notice it or not. We always grow more under pressure because you'll never learn to be patient until you have to what? Wait. You'll never learn to endure until you're under pressure. You never trust God alone until you have to trust what? God alone. And you'll never be able to develop that character until things aren't good because we grow more under pressure. Well, that's true in sports. And it's true in our spiritual life. No pain, no gain. And that's how it is. And God knows that. If, in fact, God's to work in your life and to work in my life and to develop character, things have to get bad sometimes. And it seems like in those times, he's the most silent, isn't it? But you know what it really is? It's that we're the most sensitive to his silence because that's when we want to hear something. That's when we're interested in God showing up. When things are good, it's kind of like, take it easy, God. We're over here doing our thing. You do your thing, and we'll do our thing. We're just not interested in signs. We're not interested in anything. Everything is fine. But when God begins to grind a little bit on our character, when God begins to develop some of that stuff within those relationships that we want to get out of, but we can't, all of a sudden we think he's not involved. He's not interested. But God is at work in developing our character. Number two, God is at work right now fulfilling and carrying out his plan for your life and my life. And what he's doing, this is the thing. He's preparing you and preparing me for the future that we don't even know about. We have no idea. We can try, but we don't know. Some people think they know, but nobody really knows. Isn't that right? We got plans. I mean, we got our life plotted out for the next 5 years, but in reality, nobody knows. But trust God is right now involved in your life, preparing you for what lies ahead. He's not on vacation. He's not on hold. And when God is silent, he's not still. Third way in which God's involved in your life, God's involved in your life influencing those around you because people are watching. People are listening. We'll never know. You say, well, my husband and wife doesn't listen. I have to drag him or her to church. They just sit there with their arms crossed. They won't sing or read the Bible. I'm just tired. I just want out. But you don't know because that person is watching and listening because you're the key to bring them to Christ. And it gets awful. And you at least wish God would show up and say, well, hang in there or something. But God is at work in their life. And in fact, when your job or at home and people are the most antagonistic against Christianity, you know what that means? They're listening the hardest. Nobody gets mad at you because you wear glasses at work. Nobody cares. And nobody makes fun of your clothes because they don't care. But if they have to say something about your Christianity, it's because you're making a difference. And God is at work because even though he's sounding, he's not still. And isn't that encouraging? That's question number one. What's God up to? Here's a tough one. What are we supposed to do? It's easy. And we'll have to bring back to square one. When God's silent, we're to remain faithful. It's tough, isn't it? But it's simple. It's simply trust him and then obey him because faithfulness is your one ingredient. Faithfulness is our only part. It's the one part you play and God does all the rest because he engineers the circumstances. He controls what people do and what they say and where they go. Your part is simply to remain faithful. And people say, well, you don't know my circumstances. You don't know my situation. You don't know what my relationship with my husband or my wife or what's going on in my family. You don't know what's going on at work. And that's easy for you to say. You know you're right, but I know. This Bible tells me, my experience tells me, and people that ask me tells me that when you opt for unfaithfulness, the circumstances you wind up in are always worse than the ones you left. Just ask Jonah, right? I'll show him. Nope. The Bible clearly says clearly to opt for unfaithfulness under pressure is always to put ourselves in a worse circumstance than the ones we left. Never move until God says move. Because when you move before God says move, you miss his will and you mess up his plan for your life. And all the pain and the suffering of your past becomes a waste because you didn't allow God to fulfill his plan in your life. Perhaps you say, well, you don't understand. And you're right, I don't. understand. I don't know what you're up against, but I can assure you this. God hasn't abandoned you because God is faithful. He's at work in your heart changing you. He's at work structuring you so you'll be ready for what lies ahead. And He's at work influencing those around you that you just don't think are listening, but they are. That you don't think are watching, but they are. The ones that you just don't think are paying attention will never change. You don't know. And you won't know until you're willing to take that. Take that awful yet necessary step of, Lord, no matter how bad it hurts and no matter how bad it gets, and no matter how rejected I am, even if I'm faithful and receive more rejection, it doesn't matter, I'll be faithful. When God is silent, He's not still. And when God is silent, your only reasonable thing, an option to do, is to remain faithful. Is it a child, somebody sick, somebody you prayed for forever, and you think, why pray anymore? Your boss, your job, you're in the midst of a big decision, and God just isn't saying anything. What's the point of all this tension? Because I can predict something about your life, that uncertainty and that awful feeling that I don't want to go home, but I got to go home. Whatever your struggle is, it's at that point that God is doing the most in your life. You see, we don't know about Joseph's first 17 years of life, do we? As a kid playing in the sandbox and sitting on Dad's knee. We don't know about those happy days, do we? And obviously they're not important. All we know about is the tragedy. But it was that tragedy that God used to fulfill His plan. And I know from my life, and I can tell you from yours, it's that point of tension, and it's that tragedy, it's that struggle, it's that relationship that you wish you could bail out of. That's the point which God isn't the least active, but He's the most active in your life. Hebrews 11:6 says this, and without trusting, it is impossible to be well-pleasing to God, because whoever approaches Him must trust that He does exist, and He becomes a rewarder to those who seek Him out. Folks, when God is silent, He's not still. And when God is silent, you must remain faithful. Let us pray.